Amum Myoho Renge Kyo. Oh, look at the color. I'm going to have to work on the color science on this video. The lighting changes every day here. I have these big open windows, so I'm trying to keep things normal. My apologies if it's too unstable for you, but we're not here to look at my pretty face. We're here to talk about Buddhism, right? Got a question about word salad. Not in those terms, but don't worry, we're going to continue with Nichiren's Gosho on the Daimoku. We're currently in the midst of the Daimoku of the Lotus Sutra, right? And we'll get into that in a minute. There was a question, though. I think it came up in the last video about beings in the realms of form and formlessness. So what's the difference? There is no difference. If you really want to take a deep dive into being, as I'm always reminding us, is a verb, you have to understand what being isn't this. Being isn't this. This is a conjugation of the word to be, being. But the problem with our minds and language is that we settle on certain parameters for things without really considering critically the totality of what we're saying. So when I say to you being is a verb, I don't mean that this is being. I mean that this is a this because it is the function of, the process of being. Word salad. So if you go and look at the videos, hundreds of them by now, on the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. What is a thought? Can you consider that a thought is being? Can you touch it? Can you grab it? Can you put it in a bag? And yet the thought is being. Oh, we'd say it's occurring, but what's the difference? Occurring, being, happening. Everything in samsara, the physical universe, is occurring, being, manifesting, instantiating, moment to moment to moment. You've got to unglue yourself from the idea that this is a permanent from one moment to the next existing. That's the whole ball of wax. That's the whole insight of Buddhism. That this is now, 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 now. It's not being as a noun, always there. It's something that is happening. It's an event reoccurring moment to moment. That's how it changes from moment to moment. Because 100 years from now, or 200 years from now, if I were still here, not aging, and tossing this up, it would be dust. It would be far different than it is now. Moment to moment, nothing remains the same. So when I say beings in form and formation, the process is what I'm talking about. Nothing can form if it isn't amalgamating into form. And that amalgamating process, that formation, it's already being. It just hasn't instantiated yet. Yes? This is the truth of all phenomena. Air, molecules, atoms, you, the mountain. And it's occurring every single moment, birth, death. Over and over and over again, we repeat this. When do we get it? When does it make sense? When do we understand the implication of that? That's why we chant. Because when we chant, we open that door of understanding, that Gohonzon portal, to that experience of experiencing moment to moment that very process. Namu myoho renge kyo, namu myoho renge kyo, namu myoho renge kyo, namu myoho renge kyo. This is happening right now. We get unglued from the idea of permanence, of thingifying, because when we label something a thing, we are stopping it in its tracks. It's what we're doing with our brains, with our samsaric minds. We're saying, this is a this now and forever it's that. And that's a lie. It's comfortable. It means we can own it, have it, and therefore identify a self as real. Because if I weren't real, I wouldn't have this stuff. But that's not you. The stuff isn't you. The permanence isn't you. The reflection in the mirror isn't you. You are a process happening moment to moment, constantly changing, aren't you? You know this. We all know this. This far into this video, you already know you're not the same person you were before you started this video. Because you're thinking differently now. Because your thoughts are you. Not the collection. Not the waste basket of past moments. That's gone. That's not you. But boy, in samsara, we want to drag that garbage heap along with us constantly. No, that's me. No, it isn't. You're happening right now. You're changing moment to moment. This is why it's so important to constantly chant, to make sure that this next moment comes from a place of wisdom, of insight, of actual experience. That your next action, your next commitment to being isn't based on old, outdated, not relevant. Yeah. This is enlightenment. And as we're reading here, segue, in Daimoku, the very meaning of Daimoku, the construct of Daimoku, every portion of the characters that represent the sounds and the verbalizations of Daimoku are that. They're super conceptual. They're not this or that. They're not words. They're not things. They're representations. They're opening doors. They're consummate embraces of verbing, existing, being, not the thing being, the process being. Just were the first three words of the next sentence. All the beings throughout the major world system and the worlds of the Ten Directions heard about this and unanimously concluded that even though as many kalpas should pass as there are dust particles of the land, Devadatta and the others would never escape from the great citadel of hell of incessant suffering, and that though the stone that marks the duration of a kalpa might be worn completely away, they would continue to suffer in the Avicii hell. Why? What is that saying? What does Nichiren mean by that? Right? We ended the last video talking about these relatives, these cousins and relatives of Shakyamuni Buddha who were vying to, you know, Shakyamuni got, well, he got pretty popular teaching this Buddhism stuff. Hell, we know just as much as he does. Let's start our own. Let's compete with, screw him. We're better than him. Right? That's the story of Devadatta and the others. But people realized, you're not the author of this. You didn't discover this. So you're really good at it. And you memorized all of it. Good for you. But it's not emanating from you. You didn't discover this. And instead of getting merit for all of your education and your knowledge and your knowing about this, your constant activity to demonize and destroy, instead of joining with him, you're trying to take him down so you can one-up him. That's all ego. That's not what he's teaching at all, and therefore not what you really don't understand, what you think you understand. You're an egomaniac. And because of that, you're stuck. You're stuck in that past garbage. Because you're identifying yourself as everything you've collected rather than being enlightened. So you're in that hell of incessant suffering. Samsara, welcome. You haven't changed anything at all. You're just parroting words and you're trying to take ownership of the words. What a fool. How astounding then that in the Devadatta chapter of the Lotus Sutra, Shakyamuni speaking, dealing directly with Devadatta's ego, Shakyamuni Buddha would reveal that Devadatta was his teacher in a past existence and should predict that he would attain enlightenment in the future as a thus come one called Heavenly King. What? Teacher? Okay. Now, if you read that literally, it's confusing as hell, yeah? But what, think about it. What does he mean by that? Oftentimes, the people who seem to us to be our greatest obstacles, actually, if we can back off of it a little bit, get objective about it a bit, and it usually comes with time because we're not very good at figuring it out in the moment, they force upon us, if you will, language being what it is, a demand to perceive differently. How do I deal with this obstacle, right? It forces you to, how do I get around it? How can I make use of it? Oh, that's very advanced thinking. Mostly we're just trying to figure out how to run away from it. But even then, aren't you learning something?
Yeah, I'm learning not to get it.
No. Just objectively. Right? Obstacles force us to figure things out. Critical thinking. Right? Life isn't just a wonderful slide down the snowy mountain of perfection. There are bumps. There are trees. There are obstacles. And when those obstacles arise,
we need to figure out how to deal with them, avoid them, incorporate them, use them, be at one with the conditions of life. All of it is constructive as well as constructed. It's attitude and intent, always attitude and intent. This is where Buddhism lies. So this is what Shakyamuni is saying in the Lotus Sutra. Devadatta, yeah, did a lot of incredibly egomaniacal, stupid things, but he also memorized a tremendous amount of information, learned how to change himself deeply. His ego got in the way and prohibited him from getting to enlightenment. But it will come. The seeds are set. He can't unlearn what he's learned. So it may take him longer than others, but eventually it simply has to blossom. Because it's so well planted. Even if he doesn't understand what he's planted it. Buddhahood, it's there. His ego is his resistance to it. But he'll have successive moments of questioning himself, and eventually his ego will let go and he will feel safe being enlightened. It's just fear. And gosh, I myself, Shakyamuni, must have thought to himself as he encourages, it's raining if you hear that noise, that this is oftentimes what it's like to teach yourself. Sometimes it's not pretty. Sometimes going through an obstacle helps you develop so much more understanding, compassion for others who might be dealing with the same obstacles of some sort. It's different for everyone, but an obstacle nonetheless, right? Dealing with gravity today, my apologies. Can't seem to keep this in place. If the sutras preached before the Lotus Sutra are true, then the Lotus Sutra must be an outrageous lie. Why does he say that? Because earlier teachings led to these provisional aha moments and insights, right? But they weren't complete. And when the Lotus Sutra comes along and says, now this, does that mean the Lotus Sutra is a lie? Or does that mean the teachings leading up to the Lotus Sutra were a lie? Or is it more reasonable to understand that we learn things in stages, degrees of understanding? And that sometimes when we reach a new level of understanding, oh, what I thought I understood before, it served me for the moment, but is total bullcrap, right? Now I get it. That doesn't mean that it wasn't useful to go through what you did before. It just wasn't complete. But if the Lotus Sutra is true, then the previous sutras must be guilty of perpetrating the wildest deceptions. If Devadatta, who committed 3 of the 5 cardinal sins and in addition was guilty of countless other grave offenses, could become the thus come one heavenly king, then there can be no doubt that the other evildoers, right, people who are just totally erred in their thinking, who commit only 1 or 2 of the cardinal sins, will surely attain the way as well. That means that even the people that we look upon down our noses at, as they'll never understand. Those people are dirt. They're bleh. They also have Buddhahood. They are also of the same process. they're expressing, they're instantiating their beingness in a really disgusting way. They don't think so. They think they're right. How will they understand that they're wrong if nobody helps them to understand? If nobody tries to either correct them or influence them, sway them, consider this, my friend. I know you... words. For if the great earth itself could be overturned, then the plants and trees on it would, as a matter of course, be overturned. And if one can crush the hardest stone, one can certainly bend the pliant grasses. Therefore, the Lotus Sutra is called Myo. Myo. It's an influence. A breath of fresh air. Yes, 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 but... Coming now to the subject of women. We're back on women. We find that they are strongly condemned in both the Buddhist and non-Buddhist writings. The works known as the Three Records and the Five Canons of the Three Sovereigns and the Five Emperors of Ancient China depict them as fawning and crooked. That's not Buddhist teaching. That's just the history of mankind, yeah? I've talked about this before. Man, human man, animal man, contending with his own limitation, seeing a woman create life. How do I compete with that? Oh, you must be evil demon, dirty, bleeding every month. Just fear. Fear of meaninglessness, yeah? That's a whole other video. For this reason, disaster is said to have come about because of the three women of antiquity. Again, this storied, phonic. I love that word, phonic. C-H-T-H-O-N-I-C. Phonic. First came across it reading a book by Camille Paglia, or Paglia. Amazing woman, super intelligent. Has a book called Sexual Personae. It's about this man-woman identity instantiation throughout history and cultures. Fascinating read. I highly recommend it. The Apollonian male and the Thonic female. Really amazing book. Anyway. For this reason, disaster is said to have come about because of the three women of antiquity. There it is. Women are the embodiment of the devil. Or destructive behavior. Thonic. The great destroyer, female. Meanwhile, men are running around with clubs just busting the hell out of everything they can hit. But females, they're the destroyers. It's hilarious. In a very, very profound way. Thus, women are identified as the cause of the downfall of a nation and its people. Right? It's not Xi Jinping. No. The Flower Garland Sutra, the first great teaching that Shakyamuni Buddha preached following his enlightenment, states, quote, women are messengers of hell who can destroy the seeds of Buddhahood. They may look like bodhisattvas, but at heart they are like yaksha demons, end quote. And why do you think Shakyamuni said that in the Avatamsaka, the first thing come out of his mouth? But see, if you study Buddhism, you understand what he meant wasn't women standing alone being demons. What he was referencing, he was speaking to, you have to remember who he was speaking to, men whose earthly desires, attachments, edification, putting women on pedestals, making them so desirous. Yeah, it's part of our biology. That's why we still exist. It's not all negative, but the ideation, the identification that males produce their own reality in their minds about what a woman is, destroys their higher potential. Do you understand? It's not the woman doing it, it's the man's mind using their construction of women that he's identifying. The Nirvana Sutra, the Buddha's last teaching, right, that he delivered in the Grove of South Trees says, quote, all rivers and streams are invariably winding and devious, and all women are invariably fawning and crooked. Same words as the Chinese emperor fable story, right? It also says, quote, if all the desires and delusions of all the men throughout the major world systems were lumped together, now he's getting specific, they would be no greater than the karmic impediment of one single woman. Is it becoming more obvious now? Who's he talking to? Not talking to the women. He's talking to the men. He's saying, wake the hell up. Stop being led by, yes, breed, make children, yes, but get your head in the game. Don't be led by your animal urges. This is the reason that so many years were spent developing monasteries and isolation. He's trying to get men to get their head out of their, you know what. It's hard because we're hardwired to breed. It's not a bad thing. But mentally, get your attitude a little, just a little bit higher. Yeah. When the Flower Garland Sutra says that women, quote, can destroy the seeds of Buddhahood, end quote, it means that they scorch and burn the seeds that would otherwise allow them to become Buddhas. We get so preoccupied, men do, and women. We're equal opportunity here. What we're talking about is our sexual drive. And it's a magnificent, necessary, wonderful thing. But if it drives your life, your value for life, welcome to hell. You've got to know that our human existence is more than breeding. That there's, why breed? What is the objective? To make more? Is that it? Is that life? Certainly there's a greater, more profound meaning to the reason we're chasing after this reinstantiation of self. What is it we're all trying to attain that we're willing to perpetuate our physicalness into the future to attain it? When clouds mass in the sky in a time of great drought and heavy rain falls to earth, then countless withered plants and trees everywhere will put forth blossoms and bear fruit. but this is not true of the seeds that have been scorched. They will never sprout. Rather, the heavy rain makes them rot. This is a very profound message on being acutely aware of this preciousness of life, that we have such an intimate function of perpetuating. What for? For the act of perpetuating it? Of course not. There must be something much greater to impose upon us biologically this insatiable, incredible need to just continue to do it. We're no different than squirrels. Right? Certainly, as humans with a sentient mind, there must be more on offer. And if we don't seek out what that is, then obviously life is suffering, First Noble Truth, because we're simply chasing our frickin' tails day and night. There is more. Buddhahood says there is more. There is the witnessing of this entire dharma, that is the existence and perpetuation of life, not just sex, not just breeding, not just, right? What is that excitement we feel at the first breath a baby takes? That's not about the sexual act. That's about something much greater. Isn't that what we want to know? Buddhahood. I remember Alan Watts said something that really caught me one day. He was talking about the first sounds a baby makes. It's not dada, mama, it's tata. Tata, tata gata. It's the beingness of life. Baby got it. Starts losing it immediately because of attachments, yeah? But that, when Alan said that, I thought, holy my, he really hit on something there. Tathagata. The thus come one. Now the Buddha is like the masses of clouds. His teaching are like the heavy rain, and the withered plants and trees are like all living beings. When they are watered by the rain of the Buddhist teachings and observe the five precepts, the 10 good precepts, and the meditative practices, all of which bring merit, they will put forth blossoms and bear fruit. Namo Myo Renge Kyo. They will put forth blossoms and bear fruit. Isn't breeding new humans into this life bearing fruit? But what is the blossoms? The blossoms, those happen from the fruits themselves, and we are fruits as well. The blossoms is our minds. That's where we blossom, isn't it? When a child or an adult or a man or woman succeeds in doing something that amazes us, do we not see that a blossom? Consider the analogies here. The scorched seeds that never sprout, even though the rain falls on them, but instead rot, are comparable to women who, though they encounter the Buddhist teachings, cannot free themselves from the sufferings of birth and death. There's a big clue. but instead turn away from the truth of Buddhism and fall into the evil paths. This is what the sutra means when it says that women can destroy the seeds of Buddhahood. It's not identifying the women themselves alone. It's identifying womanness, and that includes you guys. A woman cannot breed by herself. So, if a woman is unable to embrace the blossoms of life, and that's not all on her shoulders, is it? That's in her communion, her relationship with men. If that union cannot produce bear fruit with the aim of blossoming, but simply bears fruit as an accident, then that is a very sad thing, a very negative thing. And it's going to take a lot of work to turn that into a positive thing, a blossoming thing. That's what all of that is about. That's I'm going to stop there because that's a that's something to chant on, meditate on, consider. What are we doing as a society? What are we doing as individuals? What are we doing in our relationships? Are we seeking to create blossoming? Or are we just entertaining ourselves? Is everything today about entertainment, distraction, having fun? How many years will we spend having fun before we find, I'm tired of all this effort of having fun and it just goes away so quickly? Can't maintain it. I don't have the energy. Where has all the fun gone? How much time will you spend wasting your energy on entertainment rather than investing your energies in something brilliant? Namo myo renge kyo, my friends. It's a heavy one today, but also an amazingly enlightening one, yeah? Photons of light galore. Aim for the photons. Talking in poetics today. Word salad. Hopefully it all has some inspirational meaning. Keep your practice strong. Keep chanting. If you're in a relationship, chant together at any opportunity. Namo myo renge kyo. Create blossoms, lotus blossoms, if you will, any blossom. Blossoming is what human experience is all about. The universe is a huge blossom. Unfathomably huge, yeah? Yeah, it's got planets and universes and galaxies and all the stuff in it, but it's not about the stuff. It's about the blossoming of it, the totality of it. You, me, him, her, child, adult. It's all planets and stars and energy, immense, immeasurable, and amazing. Namo myo renge kyo. Please like and subscribe. Grow this sangha, please. We've never needed this kind of thinking more in the history of Earth or human beings. We're on the precipice of a lot of negative stuff. We can't let it win. Right? Namo myoho renge kyo. Keep your practice strong. Keep your health strong. And as huge a mission as that may seem, it's light as a feather. Right? Don't let yourself get dragged down by it. Don't be hard on yourself. That's not useful. Anytime you feel those walls coming in toward you, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, penetrate them with love and excitement and photons of light. Lightness of being. Yes? I'm out of cliches. I'll see you in the next one. Take care of yourself. I appreciate you guys more than I can express. Your practice means everything. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Bye for now. Myoho.